we're leading off with one of the two members of a groundbreaking show on WFAN back in the early 1990s on the overnights here. The first terrestrial pro wrestling show of its kind. A gentleman who was doing a show at WFAN at the time, also covering sports, has gone on now subsequently to work for ESPN Radio and any other number of outlets covering horse racing, baseball, and a number of different sports here. I can only be speaking of the one and only Jody McDonald. Jody, good to get you back on the show here tonight, my man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me back. And I got bad news for you. I got no opinion on Sarah Palin.
Oh, I was gonna ask you if you thought the elevator stopped short.
I have no idea. I got enough trouble following wrestling and horse racing and baseball and everything else. I stay the hell out of Alaska.
Stop short. Paul making a nice Frank Costanza reference here, but. All right, so it's good to get you on, Jody. The last time we had you on, it was around the time of the we were right in the middle of Triple Crown season here, and that's the primary time, of course, that America really tunes into what's happening with the sport of kings here. But just like to start by catching up with you because you know you're a guy that looks at 365 here all throughout the year. When you got the Hamiltonian having happened recently here, Breeders' Cup, anything that's been happening noteworthy in the sport, you know, that's really going to affect things going forward?
Well, the Breeders' Cup was a lot of fun this year with Zenyatta going for history and going for her 20th consecutive win. I thought she had a good chance to win. I picked her to win the Breeders' Cup Championship last year. This year I figured I would try and beat her, but the horse I liked was well up the track by the time they got to the top of the stretch. So I rooted wholeheartedly for her down the stretch, and it was just a crying shame that she came up a head short from being undefeated, which was would have been an unbelievable, phenomenal feat. Now, she didn't. She came up just short. She's going to end her career 19-1, and some people are saying because she lost that race, she shouldn't win horse of the year. They should give it to her just for her entire career. I know it's horse of the year and supposed to be only 2010, but she has just been a phenomenal competitor and brought some real life back into the sport and had Churchill Downs. And I was there for the Kentucky Derby the last 2 years, and I talked to friends of mine who were there and were covering it with me, and they said there was more electricity in the house for the Zenyatta race this year. Even though it was getting dark outside and it was late in the day, they said it was one of the best horse racing spectacles they've ever seen, and she came up so short, just so close to winning. I think she still should get Horse of the Year, even though she didn't win the Breeders' Cup Championship this year.
No, I would agree. I mean, based on how you've described it there and the impact made, I mean, there are horses that come along every so often, you know, and I'm not a hardcore horse person by any stretch of the imagination, but Cigar kind of comes to mind.
Yep.
You know, there's some of them that come along where it does seem like, you know, every honor that you can bestow on them is almost not enough, you know, in as much as there are so few animals out there that are really able to get any semblance of mainstream attention to the sport, especially outside of Triple Crown season.
And the knock on her was that she's a California horse and she runs on the synthetic tracks out in California, but she came east twice this year. She came into Arkansas and blew them away down there, and she came back to run against the boys on regular dirt, and she came up just a head short to Blame, who's a very good horse. Don't get me wrong. Blame is going to be a top sire for years to come and is going to be the older horse of the year, colt of the year. But as far as overall horse of the year, even though he won by a head on Breeders' Cup Day, Zenyatta should, because she overcame a couple of the knocks on her with the ability to take her race on the road, I think she should be Horse of the Year because of that.
Well, I would agree, definitely, and hopefully that would be the case, notwithstanding the parameters that people generally apply for that. I'd like to get your thoughts also, again, because you've been so much involved also with covering the world of baseball. If you just kind of look at it thematically, is it not almost kind of fitting who won the World Series here? You know, we were hearing all throughout the year of the pitcher, you know, all these 1-0 games. The no-hitters are what grabbed the mainstream attention the most. But when you looked at it, and again, we kind of had a theory at FDH through the course of the year that in the last couple of years, the number of legitimate ace pitchers in baseball has gone from about 10 to about 25. It's really kind of gone through this transformation, at least in our opinion. And the team that went out there and won the World Series probably exemplifies that like no other team, not least of which because their offense did kind of look assembled together at times, which it really kind of was. But 1 through 4, maybe even 1 through 5, if you're going in the season and you're putting Zito there, I mean, who stacks up better and deeper than the Giants, and they end up being the world champions?
Congrats to Brian Sabian, the general manager there, who's doing it without a Yankee-like payroll or a Red Sox-like payroll or even a Philly-like payroll, the team that they beat to get to the World Series. They're doing it on much less of a payroll. And you're right, it's pitching. It starts with Lincecum and goes to Kane, and Madison Bumgarner steps up and is huge as he was, and Sanchez as well. But as good as they were, and that's the reason why they won. I thought the more compelling story was how they put this ragtag team together, picking up a Pat Burrell from the scrap heap, and he helps get him there. Even though he didn't do anything in a World Series and not all that much in the postseason, they don't make the postseason if they don't acquire Pat Burrell. They pick up Ross on waivers, which means anybody in the standings below the Giants could have claimed him. They all passed on him. He becomes a postseason hero with his bat. The Edgar Renterias of the world, who they've been trying to write off for 2 years, gets huge hits, and the Juan Uribes and the Aubrey Huffs, who could have gone anywhere and had to settle for a middling contract from the Giants. You mix that in with the best rookie catcher we've seen since Joe Mauer in Posey, and the job he did not only with his bat but behind the plate, handling that Giant pitching staff. It was a great story, and the general manager has to get a ton of credit for that. Don't take away from Bruce Bochy. I know he didn't get much support for Manager of the Year in today's voting, but he's a phenomenal manager, one of the best in baseball. But Brian Sabian did a great job of not only building this team from April on, but then in July and August and September when he had to add to it and kind of retransform the team, he did just that. And I know there are a whole bunch of Giant fans. They're happy that he pulled it off.
Exactly. First win since they went to San Francisco in 1958. First one since 1958. So there are people who might say I'm getting ahead of myself in posing the premise to you here, Jody Mack, but I hold to this nonetheless. I think history is going to record them in the next couple of years. If they don't win at least a couple more pennants or at least one more World Series, I think they're going to go down as underachievers because of the front four quartet of pitchers who you mentioned. You got Posey in there. You got Brian Wilson. That's a half dozen guys right there that you're building around. Most other teams would find, you know, completely, you know, that they would be completely jealous of. And a lot of money coming off the books. You mentioned Renteria. You mentioned Rowan. That was a bad contract that's coming off the books here. I mean, they're going to have the money to be able to augment that core. Granted, you're going to have to lock up some of the guys. You know, Kane is going to be a little bit closer to free agency in the next couple of years because of how long he's been up. So it's not like it's going to be without its challenges, but if they don't make more noise than this, are they not going to go down as an underachiever?
Yeah, maybe. They'd still... Unless they can do what Philadelphia did. Philadelphia, just because the town caught its baseball fever and because they got so good, they started selling out every single game, and they've sold out over 100 and change plus in a row. San Francisco's going to need that kind of backing. They're going to have to pack that house night in and night out because they can't build a payroll like the Yankees or the Red Sox. And Lincecum is on the second year of an arbitration-eligible deal, so he's going to go up some, but then he's going to get a huge leap the year after that. They are going to have to pay Kane. Wilson's going to want to renegotiate his contract. The stars that they have are only going to go up as far as money goes. So the reason why I think they can do it is because Sabian's as good as he is. And he can go out and make the kind of moves for middling salaried players that step in and produce big time for him. But keeping some of their starts together, that core that you mentioned, the 5 or 6 guys, Posey will be easy because they're not going to have to pay him for a while. But those other guys are going to step up to the table as far as the big time salaries go pretty quickly. And they're going to get what they ask for. If it's not from the Giants, they'll get it from somebody else.
Jody, great minds think alike. You made a point that I've been making off air here. You obviously know the Philadelphia market so very well. I've kind of made the same comparison myself because Philly, and again, it's a constant in terms of the population size and all of that, but it's not a constant in terms of, we didn't really regard them as a big market team before Howard Utley Rollins. I mean, it was a huge market, but it didn't seem like it. The attendance didn't back it up, etc. They've managed to transform themselves into a legitimate big market. I look at San Francisco with that glittering jewel of a ballpark. I look at the Bay Area, which is one of the biggest media markets in the country. The blueprint's right there when you look at what Philly did. They can transform themselves into being a bigger player, and I'd be very surprised if they didn't.
give the Philadelphia fans credit. When the Phillies were a good team, solid team, they had good attendance, they had solid attendance. When they put a superior product on the field, the fans came out and packed the house. And the other parallel, you kind of hinted at it, Citizens Bank Park is one of the best parks in all of baseball. It's not only a good place to go watch a baseball game, you can bring your family there, there's a lot to do. It really is a fun time, and San Francisco's got that same attraction, one of the best ballparks in baseball. So, you had a world championship to a good ballpark with some young young players that should be there for a good couple years. There's no reason why the Giants can't sell out the majority of their games, if not all their games, the way the Phillies do. And if that's the case, I think their ownership will do the exact same thing that Philadelphia's ownership did, which is put the money back into the team. For years, Philadelphia ownership was mocked. We're a small market mentality in a major market. Well, if the revenue isn't coming in and the people aren't going to the park and they're not watching it on TV and generating big ratings, the ownership wasn't willing to dip into its own funds and run the team at a loss just to try and win a championship. The people came out, everything came together, now they're one of the top three or four salary teams in baseball, and all things are working. The Giants are going to have to make that same kind of leap starting next year. They have to build it off the championship, stay in the mix. If they do, they'll be able to generate a lot of revenues and keep all those great young players.
I think they will, yeah. And as you said, Brian Sabian's going to be the key to this. And ownership, which I think is going to be smart enough to realize this is your classic spend money to make money scenario right here. The city's in love with the team, and they need to do everything they can to keep it that way. I'd like to circle around also, too, to the world of wrestling. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the show. I don't know how much you got a chance to catch. Did you get to see any of the old school Raw on Monday night?
I did.
Okay, what were your thoughts on it? It seemed to me, from my perspective, to have come off very well.
It was good. I enjoyed it. The Brooklyn Brawler was a guy who I grew up watching and thought was a lot of fun. Roddy Piper always is entertaining, although he and aren't we all getting older. It was tough to see Roddy in there faking like he was going to mix it up. But I don't know about you, but my favorite thing was Mean Gene Okerlund.
Yeah.
He hasn't changed a bit. He looks the same. He sounds the same. And that's the voice that I watched when I was in my prime of my wrestling watching. And I thought it was great that they brought him back. It's not the easiest thing to do to run an old-school type show like that, because anybody who's followed the WWE or the WWF or go way back to the WWWF days, Vince McMahon's a tough guy to work for. He makes friends, he makes money, and he also makes enemies. So a lot of people leave the company on bad terms, and there just isn't any coming back for certain superstars and people who wrestling fans would remember fondly. So are they ever going to be able to run a perfect retro WWE night? No, probably not, because there are some people that just won't ever work with, around, or for Vince again. But for what they tried to do, I thought they pulled it off pretty well. I thought it was an entertaining 3 hours.
Maybe this is smart Mark Nitt picking on my part. The only thing about Piper is, and I agree, he nailed it, and he was so instrumental to selling it in that final segment there and getting people to care about the pay-per-view and getting people to care about the championship there. Where was that guy 10 years ago when WCW needed him, when he was burying Buff Bagwell for not main eventing Madison Square Garden? You know, I mean, there's a guy that pretty much just proved right there, if he cares and he's motivated, even at his advanced age, he can still go out there and knock one out of the park. If he's not, oh, look out.
Yeah, I had completely forgotten, and he reminded us that he had never won a championship, and you think how much a driving force that Piper was, that might have been a little preconceived by Vince, that he's the greatest wrestler, the biggest star they've had who didn't win a championship, whereas now guys are 6- and 7-time world champions. They flip the champions as much as they do. He always put on a show. He was one of the most entertaining guys in the history of the WWE, but he isn't what he used to be, but that's to be expected when you're bringing back guys after so many years.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, and ultimately, it was, you know, for as much as Vince likes to do these promos word for word, I'm wondering what the look on Piper's face would have been if they handed him one of these things and told him to memorize it. It probably had the word shove somewhere in it if Vince told him that.
Yeah, I think it is a heck of a lot more scripted than it used to be. I think they've got some talented guys in there right now. I know that Cena is still a big draw, and it's been a while since he's had a championship with the whole Nexus angle that they're playing. I think some guys are allowed to and given the liberty to ad-lib where necessary, but others are quite scripted. And, hey, with the kind of ratings that Vince has been getting, you can't really complain with the way he's running the show these days.
No, you ultimately can't. No question about that. Jody, again, we always like to give our guests a chance to plug everything here, too. So I know that you're doing radio work with ESPN Radio, and please go ahead and plug anything else that you've got going on that the people should know about.
Yeah, I'm on 1050 ESPN Monday through Fridays with my partner Brandon Tierney up there in NYC. Still do some fill-in every once in a while for SiriusXM's baseball channel, where I came over from before I went back to New York on a full-time basis. So you might find me on there every once in a while. And as a former Philly guy, I like to keep my hands in the markets where I used to work. I do a once-a-week Monday morning blog on Philly Sports, PhillySportsPulse.com. So it gives me a chance to get in the kitchen of the Sixers and the Eagles and the Phillies and the Flyers on a weekly basis.
Hey, Rich, this is Paul.
Well, you know, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show, Jody. I enjoyed having you on last time as you did this time here. And, again, this was the first night in the new digs here. It was kind of a guinea pig type of situation. Next time we will be able to get you on with your old partner, Rich Mancuso, and I look forward to doing that. But always a pleasure, Jody Mack. Don't be a stranger.
Done deal. Tell Richard I send my regards, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much. Jody McDonald, everybody, from ESPN Radio, and loved having him on. And his old partner right here, I think he just heard the shout-out on the phone lines here.